Welcome to the Software Process and Measurement Cast number 361. I'm Tom Cagley, your host, and in this week's Software Process and Measurement Cast, we will include two columns. The first is our essay on software measurement. When we measure, we are sending an explicit message about what's important to the organization and therefore sending an explicit signal on how we expect people to act. If you don't believe that, remember the old adage, you get what you measure. Our second column this week is a visit from Gene Hewson and his Form Follows Function blog. In this installment, Gene throws down the gauntlet to ask the question, who needs architects? As we wrap up September, let's remember to tell a friend or a coworker about the software process and measurement. Let's use word of mouth to help grow the audience of the podcast. After all, Spamcast provides you with value. Why keep it to yourself? Why Do You Need a Measurement Program? By Thomas M. Cagley Jr., Megan E. Cagley. Measurement is a topic that most IT practitioners would rather avoid discussing. Many practitioners and managers feel that it is not possible to measure software, or that all that matters is whether the customer is satisfied. IT managers that fall into this category tend to have a point of view that management information suffices if it incorporates customer satisfaction and a notional view of how efficiently they're spending their budget. This is dangerous at best. When managers or other leaders do discuss the topic of measurement, their arguments for measurement tend to begin intellectually. Arguments begin with statements like, we need to measure to ensure we meet a model like the CMMI, or we need to measure to build knowledge so that we can estimate. While these are good reasons to measure, many measurement programs are driven by a more basic and powerful need, the need to demonstrate efficiency. The demand for IT continues to explode in every organization I speak with. The problem is that IT, whether developing, enhancing, or maintaining software, is expensive. Couple that expense with the cost to acquire and maintain hardware, and the budgets of some IT organizations become larger than moderately industrialized countries and are growing. The pressure that growing IT budgets create on the bottom line means that efficiency can no longer be a dirty word in IT organizations. If efficiency is or is about to become important, then organizational measurement can't be far away. Much of the effort in the development field over the past 10 to 12 years has been focused on effectiveness and customer satisfaction, as evidenced by the Agile movement. Efficiency has begun to creep back into the conversation under the auspices of Lean. Measurement programs focused on customer satisfaction now must be refined to discuss time to market. How much time is needed to get a unit of work to market? Productivity. How much effort is needed to get the unit of work to market? Cost efficiency. How much does a unit of work cost to come to market? Quality per unit of work. All of these measures and metrics should be developed so they are comparable and combinable across the whole IT organization. Why do we measure? The reasons include to measure performance, to ensure processes are efficient, to provide input for managing, to estimate, to pass a CMMI appraisal. All are true, important, and common reasons to measure. But the answer isn't complete. On reflection, I would add two further reasons to measure. One, to control specific behavior, and two, to predict the future. When we measure, we are sending an explicit message about what is important to the organization, and therefore sending an explicit signal on how we expect people to act. Measuring requires us not only to examine the outcome we want to incent, but the impact it can have on the whole system that generates that output. The pursuit of predicting the future is a mainstay of human culture. We practice prediction daily. like being able to predict whether there's a predator behind the next rock, whether planting corn or soybeans will bring a greater profit, or even whether your favorite sports team will win their next match. Measurement provides the data to predict the future in a more disciplined manner than guessing based on instincts. Changing behavior and predicting the future are related. It might almost be redundant to answer the question with both answers. Incenting a behavior is a mechanism that influences the future to control the outcome. Why do we measure? The answer must include the common reasons, along with the ideas of measuring to control behavior and to predict the future. The goals of a measurement program. There are three basic goals for measurement. The first goal is to drive change in an organization. The second goal is to use measurement as an enforcement tool. And the third is to provide data for other processes or decisions. Estimation, for example. The third of these goals is the most mundane and is the easiest to implement. Therefore, is where metrics per implementation start. Metrics programs that are used as part of a goal to drive change are considered to have reached the pinnacle of metrics program value. This is the first goal. Metrics programs reach this level when they are used for identifying opportunities to make changes by data analysis, sifting through data, identifying potential changes, using measurement to guide change is a strategic activity for organizations that want to evolve toward a higher level of capability. Unfortunately, most metrics programs do not have the time to follow this evolutionary approach. Organizations find it difficult to achieve the constancy of purpose required to gather the data and wait for the amount of data to reach a threshold needed for solid statistical analysis and data mining. A second approach is to follow a more aggressive strategy. The intent of this approach is to go looking for areas or groups in pain. When you identify a group in pain, use measures and metrics to help them prove and find the change that would remove the pain. This is an opportunistic approach to measurement that links measurement with process improvement to create valuable change. The second goal, measurement as an enforcement mechanism, is a bad idea. Avoid being forced into this role. Making measurement personnel into process police will politicize measurement and requires tons of effort for little value. This usually happens in organizations where line management is spread too thin to actively manage people and processes. Measures are often used to answer the questions, are changes being adopted? Are changes providing the expected rate of return? Who is playing? Who is not? Measurement programs typically start by providing information to process compliance, answering the questions of who is playing, who is not. Measurement programs see this type of data collection as providing value. Measurement programs of this type spend the majority of their time and effort generating data to support other processes and decisions. The third goal. While important, the support role is the least obvious to the decision-making portions of the organization. Metrics groups that only service the data needs of other groups in the organization are apt to be viewed as overhead, not as strategic assets. The question will always be whether measurement overhead can be cut. Therefore, the measurement team will be at risk. Bottom line, metrics programs deliver the most value when they are focused on finding and actively participating in delivering change within organizations. When metrics programs are the measurement arm of the process police or just supporting other, more valued teams, like estimators, they can easily be branded as overhead. All metrics organizations need to work on reinforcing their efforts to get involved in change while supporting other processes. Being branded as overhead is dangerous for your career. How do you build a measurement program? A roadmap to develop a measurement program does not always have a large number of steps, but rarely is easy. An 8-step sequence will include the following. 1. Defining goals and values. 2. Developing common measures. 3. Mapping the linkage between goals and common measures. 4. Identifying measures and metrics. That includes a gap analysis. 5. Validating metrics to needs, goals, and values. 6. Developing metrics definitions. 7. Mapping metrics data needs. And 8. Defining an overall dashboard. Most IT departments have a huge backlog of demand for IT services and products, which means that IT departments need to efficiently use their budgets. All IT work needs to be combined, compared, and evaluated so that it is efficiently delivered. Solid measurement programs have to balance efficiency, effectiveness, quality, and customer satisfaction. The process starts with understanding the goals of the organization and then ensuring what gets measured and demonstrate progress against those goals. Deciding what to measure in an IT organization. Deciding what to measure in an IT organization is like letting a child loose in a candy store. There are so many things to measure in so little time. The natural tendency is to measure everything. I once was shown a list of 248 measures for a 50-person development maintenance group. I actually counted the whole list. It was crazy and required a staff of 3 people to collect and crunch all the data. In the frenzy to measure and collect everything, the logic is often that it does not matter whether the information will be used now. We might need it later. This is usually a sign that the organization needs to step back and reevaluate. I suggest a simple measurement palette that supports a wide range of organizational goals. We'll discuss syncing measurements to the organizational goals in a future article. A basic IT measurement palette can start with these 6 measures. Size. Begin by measuring the size of the functionality that's being delivered. I recommend IFPUG function points for functional size. However, there are other functional measures such as Cosmic, NESMA, Mark II, and perhaps others that could work. While none of these measures are perfect, they are currently the best means to determine how much functionality is being delivered. More advanced organizations might add measures of non-functional requirements like SNAP to further broaden their understanding of what is being delivered. 2. Cost. Your IT organization should understand how much each project costs, which means the organization is going to have to invest or at least understand good cost accounting techniques. Decisions about whether or how you allocate corporate and IT overhead to projects, or whether to include hardware costs, even if it's to be apportioned, are important decisions in order to understand the total cost of a piece of work. Effort. Measure the actual amount of effort it takes to deliver a project. Actual means just that. How much time is needed? Not the amount you will bill, and don't dump hours in a project that's ahead of schedule. Effort, time accounting is a close relative of cost accounting and needs to be approached with equal discipline. One final note. Collect effort and hours. Anything lower is too much overhead, and anything higher generates a lot of measurement error. Duration. Collect the start and end dates of a project. If you're using flow methodologies, start and end of individual features or functions will suffice. I also suggest collecting interim dates, such as release dates. One common issue with determining duration is having a definition of what marks the beginning and end of project. One of the reasons people are taking a product view these days. For example, is the research to investigate concept feasibility part of a project or not? If your project has a warranty period, the development team is supporting the implementation and fixing product defects, is that part of the project or part of maintenance? Each organization needs to have a common set of policies to ensure that everyone understands what start and end means. They must talk the same language. Defects. I recommend counting all post-implementation defects. If needed, organizations can get fancy and account for defects found during the development process. I rarely find that that actually has a ton of value. Post-implementation defects are a reflection of the quality that the customer actually feels. One simplification I often recommend is that instead of spending huge amounts of time to figure out which project caused a defect, credit the defect to the project that last touched the application. They should have found the defect perhaps during regression testing. Finally, satisfaction. Measure customer satisfaction using a simple survey or an interview approach. 5-ish or less questions. Focus on trying to identify whether the overall satisfaction to any customer group is changing at a high level. When you see a move in the data, you can spend the time on a more in-depth investigation. More advanced approaches should leverage techniques such as Net Promoter. A simple measurement palette can be used to generate a wide range of metrics. For example, effort and size can be used to generate productivity. Size and duration can be used to generate velocity or time to market metrics. More importantly, by tackling this simple palette, organizations can develop the discipline needed to generate value from measurement. Are you measuring the right thing? Jason Yip commented on my post, Why Measure?, pointing out the problem with many measures that are used, and therefore the unintended behavior they cause because the wrong question is being asked. Asking the wrong question or seeking the wrong answer is exacerbated when measures or metrics are not linked to organizational goals. Measures and metrics that are not closely linked to the organization's commitments cause the wrong behavior. The only way to truly know if your measures and metrics are linked to the organizational goals is to map them back to the goals. There are several techniques for determining whether linkage exists. We begin simply with a mapping matrix approach using a spreadsheet. Here's the basic spreadsheet-based metrics mapping process. 1, identify the organizational goals and objectives. While this should be as simple as asking the first person you run into, generally collecting the goals and objectives is more problematic and can generate quite a bit of conversation. That might be a benefit in its own right. If you have to mine for the objectives, review the annual report or interview senior managers. As a general rule, you are looking for the overall organizational goals rather than those of a department. However, if you are serving as an autonomous division within a conglomerate, your sights might be lower. 2, list the organizational goals across the top of a spreadsheet. 3, inventory all measures and metrics that are collected in a standalone mode, not part of a measurement program. Remember that a measure is a concrete or objective attribute that can be directly measured. Metrics are a combination of 2 or more measures or metrics, such as miles per hour. 4, list the measures and metrics down the side of the spreadsheet. The resulting matrix will look something like what's in the show notes. Measure and metrics down the left-hand side, goals across the top, with blank cells looking for intersections. 5, convene a cross-functional team of approximately 5 to 7 people. Include management, team members, product owners, and other IT stakeholders. Fill in the matrix. This is generally a 2-pass process. 1, to quickly do it, and then 2nd, to actually argue out some of the nuances. In pass 1, walk through each measure and develop a consensus of whether it directly incentivizes the behavior that supports the goal and the strength of that support that is being generated. Use blanks or Harvey balls to integrate degree of support visually. A blank means no support, and a full closed Harvey ball is a strong support. That's a whole black circle. Time box this step to no more than 2 minutes per metric on average, because you want initial reactions, not people going into just fabulous detail. pass two, challenge the team to walk through each measure and metric and to name the behavior they believe the metric will incent. Then ask them to revisit or refine their initial observations. I consider the order important. The first step helps to identify participants' natural, non-intellectualized view of a metric or measure, and also creates a minor anchor bias. The second step allows the participants to express their intellectual positions and to challenge the potentially more emotional position they've initially espoused. You'd end up with a matrix where some number of measures might not be linked to a goal, blanks. Some are very strongly linked. And that's that full Harvey ball. In some cases, you might have multiple measures linked to one specific goal and none on another. What we're looking for are gaps and overlaps. Six, where the linkages between metrics and goals are not strong and specific, there are three options. One, stop collecting the metric. That's my favorite if there is no or just tenuous linkage, or if there are other stronger links. Less is generally more in measurement. Two, change or refine the metric if you absolutely need to refine the metric to cover a specific goal or to incent specific behavior. Three, continue despite the lack of linkage and waste everyone's time. This is usually driven by poor internal politics. The mapping and matrix approach is easy to deploy and collaborative. Involving all the stakeholders in the measurement mapping process creates a substantial level of buy-in. The process of refining the links between measurement and goals can generate a lot of information about the organization. For example, the process will expose whether all levels of the organization know what the goals are and whether they are progressing against them. Measurement does not have to be complicated, but it's rarely easy. Measurement generates data and incents behavior. At times, the process can feel manipulative. It is. But that does not mean it is bad or wrong. Organizations have a vision and goals to help focus everyone on moving in a specific direction. Publishing a mission, vision, and goals is manipulative and is generally considered a good thing to do. Measurement is a tool in the same toolkit. Thoughts, comments, all welcome. Please feel free to send us an email at spamcastinfo@gmail.com. Record a message on your smartphone and send that to spamcastinfo@gmail.com. Or give us a ring at 440-668-5717. We look forward to the conversation. Gene Hewson, welcome back to the Software Process and Measurement Cast.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be here.
Gene, it is always exciting to have you come on and talk through one of your blog entries. If you don't know and you haven't listened to one of the podcasts before, Gene, it can be found at genehewson.wordpress.com. Gene writes the wonderful Form Follows Function blog. So, Gene, why don't we dive in? And recently, you wrote an article that you titled, Who Needs Architects Because Yagni Doesn't Scale? Gene, where were you going with that? Before you dive in on that one, I've got to say, anybody who can quote Rush, and you actually started that one off with a quote from Kent Beck and then followed it up with Rush, you know, combining those two is quite a feat.
Hey, you know, it's always a good blog entry when you can go to ancient source of wisdom, aka classic rock.
Amen.
I've had a long history with what I call bumper sticker philosophies. Basically, those short, pithy, and for the most part, as I say, so lacking in nuance as to be dangerous sayings that people latch onto really without thinking. And without thinking is, to me, a real red light when we're talking about software development. At least for me, the essence of software architecture is decision making. And that decision making, in my opinion, should be based on a rational appreciation of the context you're dealing with, not here's a slogan that I've picked up and I'm going with this. And Yagni is one of those ones that's kind of right at the top of my list.
Yagni stands for?
You ain't gonna need it. Because, as I like to point out frequently, sometimes you are gonna need it. And in most cases where you are gonna need it, and it turns around to bite you that you don't, it's something that really should not be a big surprise. To use one of Tlaib's sayings, it's not a black swan. Someone with a minimum of experience should be able to foresee things like need for scale, need for security. Don't think it should be a big surprise to anybody in 2015 that if you're going to put an application out that's publicly accessible, there needs to be an appropriate level of security. And again, going with the Rush quote that I put up, choosing to defer that decision is making a decision. You're deciding that you're going to be able to implement a fair portion of an application without including some fundamental core aspect of that application until later. Bolting on fundamentals after the fact is, you know, in my opinion, a really bad idea. You run a much greater risk of leaving out something, having something that's an ill fit to your context. Those things are much better, at least considered upfront. Going in blindfolded just doesn't, to me, seem like a good idea.
Why an architect? And, you know, aren't we, to sort of paraphrase Fred Brooks, aren't we curating a sort of an elite that thinks for the team or thinks for the team of teams if you're doing a large application?
Sure. That is a danger. Absolutely. Another one of my pet ideas is the idea of collaborative architecture. Thinking for people tends to be a really bad idea for a lot of reasons. One of which is it tends to rub people the wrong way. Even more importantly is the fact that nobody is omniscient. There's always something that you can miss. In one of my early blog entries was an old story about a British admiral who was kind of the hotshot of the British Navy in the 1890s, and he drowned after running his entire fleet into each other on maneuvers because the helmsman of the ship he was on tried to warn him that the turning radiuses of the two groups of ships would overlap, and the helmsman was stared down because he was questioning the preeminent sailor in Her Majesty's Navy.
That's a little bit of karma.
Yeah. It's one of those things. Listening to other people is absolutely important. Taking feedback, collaborating rather than dictating really does two things. One is it can save you a lot of grief when somebody realizes something that you don't. The other thing is it's kind of a teachable moment. And I think rather than a dictator, an architect should be a mentor, a teacher, somebody who is making sure the development team is aware of those kind of cross-cutting concerns that an architect should be aware of. And that's really my biggest justification for an architect is the old tragedy of the commons. You need somebody thinking about those cross-cutting concerns. Someone whose responsibility is those concerns rather than any one feature that the individual members of the development team will be spending the majority of their focus on. The development team should be cognizant of considering architectural concerns, but obviously each developer's, the majority of their focus is going to be on what's on their plate at the moment.
You tied that whole blog entry up with the discussion of whether or not it's possible to architect the perfect system or to architect it perfectly. Is it?
Perfectly? No. I tell people the problem with perfection is by the time you've implemented perfection, the definition of it has moved on. The best you can hope for, in my opinion, is what I refer to as an optimal system. The system that best fits the context under the circumstances. And the biggest factor in doing that, I believe, is flexibility. Understanding what decisions, what the costs as well as the benefits are. Sometimes going down a particular road is going to limit your options in that respect in the future. Knowing when you're going to start shutting doors is important, and making sure the benefit you're getting for that cost is crucial.
Gene Hewson, thank you for bringing your wonderful Form Follows Function blog that can be found at www.genehewson.wordpress.com to the Software Process and Measurement Cast.
Thank you, Tom.
In the next Software Process and Measurement Cast, we'll feature our interview with Chris Nuri. Chris is a developer and agile coach extraordinaire. We explored the role of a coach from the point of view of someone that is actively involved in changing the world, one team at a time. Remember that the reread Saturday of the Mythical Man Month is in full swing. In upcoming events, remember, I will be at the Agile Development Conference East, November 8th through 13th, 2015, in Orlando, Florida. I will be speaking on November 12th on the topic of Agile Risk. Let me know if you're going, and we'll have a Spamcast meetup. And there'll be no risk to that. In addition to the Agile Development Conference East, I'll also be appearing at Agile Philly and during the Agile Tour on October 5th. I'll be speaking on Agile Risk Management. The Software Process and Measurement Cast is a proud member of the Tech Podcasting Network. If it's tech, then it's on the Tech Podcasting Network. Check out the Software Process and Measurement Cast and other great podcasts on TPN, www.techpodcast.com. As many of you know, I do at least one webinar for the IT Metrics and Productivity Institute every year. I think this is a very valuable organization. The IT MPI's mission is to pull together the expertise and educational efforts of the world's leading IT thought leaders and to create a single online destination where IT practitioners and executives can meet all of their educational and professional development needs. Well, except for the Spamcast, of course. The IT MPI offers a premium membership that gives members unlimited free access to 400 PDU accredited webinar recordings and waives the PDU processing fees on all live and recorded webinars. The Software Process and Measurement Cast receives a fee if you sign up using the URL in the show notes. Definitely see it in the show notes. All revenues from our sponsor goes to bandwidth, hosting, and new cool equipment to create more and better content for you. Support the Spamcast and learn from the IT MPI. The Spamcast blog and show notes can be found at www.spamcast.net. Contact Spamcast at spamcastinfo@gmail.com. Voice messages can be left at 1-206-888-6111. I also Twitter And my Twitter ID is tcagley, so please track me down. It's my intent to share all voice messages, emails, Twitters. Your comments, questions, rants are appreciated and will help to facilitate a dialogue and build community. Let me know the topics that you would like to have covered and the people you'd like to get interviewed. Get involved. The music on Spamcast is made available by the PodSafe Music Network at www.podshow.com. The featured song is by 2012 and is titled Last Battle. Information on the band can be found at www.myspace.com/2012vision.com. 2012 does an incredible job with experimental electronica. Be sure to support 2012 and all PodSafe artists. Spamcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 3.0 license. If process improvement is a never-ending journey, why do so many people ask, when will we arrive? See you next week.